Sahanavavatu, Sahanavunaktu, Sahaviryankaravavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Let's do a Shanti Pata for this. So repeat after me.
Om Bhadram Karane Vishnu Yama Devaha. Om Bhadram Karane Vishnu Yama Devaha. Bhadram Pashe Makshabhir Yajatraha. Bhadram Pashe Makshabhir Yajatraha. Stirai rangai istushtu vagum sastanubihi. Stirai rangai istushtu vagum sastanubihi. Yashema devahitam yadayuhu. Yashema devahitam yadayuhu. Swastina indro vriddhashravaha. Swastina indro vriddhashravaha. Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha. Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha. Swastina Starksho Arishtanemihi. Swastina Starksho Arishtanemihi. Swastino Brahaspatir Tadatu. Swastino Brahaspatir Tadatu. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Let's go to verse 1 and we'll just chant through to verse 3. Thanks for listening. I'll read it with a Sunday broken, okay?
Om iti etad aksharamidam sarvam. Om iti etad aksharamidam sarvam. Tasya upavyakhyanam. Tasya upavyakhyanam. Bhutam bhavat bhavishat iti. Bhutam bhavat bhavishat iti. Sarvam omkaraha eva. Sarvam omkaraha eva. Yatcha anyat. Yatcha anyat. Trikalatitam. Trikalatitam. Tad api omkaraha eva. Tad api omkaraha eva. Sarvam yetat brahma. Sarvam yetat brahma. Ayam Atma Brahma. Ayam Atma Brahma. Saha Ayam Atma. Saha Ayam Atma. Chatushpat. Chatushpat. Jagaritasthanaha. Jagaritasthanaha. Bahishpragnyaha. Bahishpragnyaha. Saptangaha. Saptangaha. Ekona vimshati mukkaha. Ekona vimshati mukkaha. Stulabuk. Stulabuk. Vaishvanaraha. Pratama padaha. Pratama padaha. Okay. Just to read through the first two verses. Om, om. Iti aksharam. This syllable, om, a-u-um, the syllable, om, is all of this. Idam sarvam, the entire manifest creation, all that we can experience, idam sarvam, all of this that can be experienced. So, this letter, om, is all of this. Tasya upavyakhyanam. Now we're going to unfold the meaning of that, of this letter, om. Starts out with first unfoldment, bhutam, Bhavat Bhavishyat Iti Sarvam Omkaraha Eva. It says, everything which has come before, that which is Bhutam in the past, Bhavat, what is in the future, but what is in the present, Bhavishyat, what is to come, all of this is indeed Om, Omkaraha. Om Akara, Omkara, Kara means the letter. All of this is this syllable, Om, Omkara. And he says, Yetcha Anyet, Kala, Kala, Atitam. And everything that is, and anything, and whatever else, Yetcha Anyet, that is beyond these three periods of time, past, present, and future, Trikala, the three periods of time, Atitam, what is beyond, Sarvam, everything that is beyond past, present, and future, Tadapi Omkarahari. That also is Om. That also is Om. Then he says, so now having talked about the Nama Om, right, the Nama, he's talking about what Om is a Nama of. First he says, the Nama Om, this name, this Nama Om, is all of this. Everything in the past, present, and future, and everything beyond past, present, and future, all that is Om. But now, in the next verse, he says, Sarvam hi etad Brahma. He says, Sarvam hi etad Brahma. All of this, instead of Om, now he's saying the Rupa, Nama Rupa. What is the Om actually referring to? What is a Nama of? Now he's talking about Brahman. Om is a Nama for Brahman. So now he says, instead of sticking with the Nama, he's going to the Rupa. Rupa means the nature of what the, that which the Om is a name of. Okay. So he says, now he says, all of this is Brahman. Right? Om is all of this. All of this is Brahman. And he says, this Atma is Brahman. Mahavakya. Om is a name for all that is. All that is Brahman. This Atma, this Self, is Brahman. You might as well be saying, this Self, I am Atma, this Self that is me, that is Aparoksha, this Self is Brahman, which is saying, this Self is all that is. And then he says, Ayam Atma Brahman, Saha Ayam Atma, and that this Atma, which is Brahman, this Atma, which is that Brahman, right? He says, this Atma has four quarters, Chatushpat. So, Om is the name for all that is Brahman. Brahman, this Atma, is that Brahman, and this Atma, which is that Brahman, has four quarters. So now we have to look at what the four quarters are. The next verse. It starts with the prata, what we call the pratama padaha, the first pada, the first quarter. Okay. Verse 3.
Okay.
So, jagarita stanaha. Jagarita means waking state. The stana is that place, which is the waking. So if I say waking state, stana means the place or the abode. So the abode of the waking state, jagarita stanaha. Okay. In the jagarita stana, this waking state is bahishpragnaha. We'll see that, what that means in a minute, but just to translate, bahishpragnaha means the waking state is consciousness which is external. External consciousness, outside consciousness. Okay? Bahish pragnaha means consciousness. Bahish means outside, external. So this waking state, what is this waking state? This waking state is external consciousness, pragnaha. It is septangaha. It has seven limbs. Okay, we'll see what that means in a minute. Septa means seven, anga means limbs. Septa angaha. It has seven limbs. It is, and all of these are nominative, so the jagarita stanaha is bahishpragnaha, is saptangaha. Okay, these are just, we're filling out what is this waking state. The waking state is external consciousness, It is Saptangaha. It has seven limbs. It is Ekona Vimshati Mukaha. It has Ekona Vimshati. Vimshati means 20. Eka Una, 20 minus 1. Eka means 1. Ekona is minus 1. Eka Una Vimshati, 20 minus 1 is 19. That's how we say 19 in Sanskrit. 20 minus 1. It has 19 mukhas. It has 19 mouths. Seven limbs, 19 mouths. It is stula book. It is a book. It is an enjoyer of the gross world. Stula means, as stula, sukshma. Stula is the external world. It's the physical world. So it is one who enjoys the stula, external sense objects, stula book. It is named, it's called one of its names is Vaishvanaraha. It's Vaishvanaraha. It's the place where all beings, all humans, Nadaha, where they all go. Or it also means, as we'll see all this in a minute, Vaishvanaraha also means Vishwanadaha. It is all humans, all human beings. And all of these things, all of this, the Jagaritastanaha, who is Bahishpragnaha, who is Saptangaha, who is Ekona Vimshati Mukaha, who is Stula Bhuk, who is Vaishvanaraha. All of this is the Prathama Pada, is the first Pada. Okay, so remember that Om is made of four Padas. A, U, M, the silence, followed by the silence. So the first Pada is A. Second, U. Third, fourth is the silence. And so if I say Om, Om rises in silence and resolves into silence, so it's bordered by silence. That silence is called the fourth pada, to start with. Okay. So, the Upanishad starts with the waking state as the first pada, because from the standpoint of the waker, then the dream state, right, is dependent upon the waking state. And deep sleep also is dependent on the waking state. So the antakarana, the mind, when it's fully manifest, or the jiva when fully manifest, is manifest here as the experiencer, as the waker, who is through the sense organs experiencing the waking world. When the jiva goes into dream state, the consciousness, the conscious being that you are, is no longer at that time identified with the waking state. And so it pulls inward. That becomes the second pada. Right? In the second pada, it's experiencing in the dream state which was once experienced in the waking state. So it's experiencing all of the input from the waking state in its own, puts it all into its own order, and you have a dream. It's a subtle. So the dream is subtle, but it's subtle experiences that were initially gained in the waking state. And then in the deep sleep state, that same antakarna goes into unmanifest condition, into an avyekta. Antakarna means mind. The mind goes into an avyekta, unmanifest condition. That's what we call the causal state or the deep sleep state. So it's working from pratama pada, the first pada, is when we're totally awake to all that is. Where the sense organs, the jiva is awake to what is in terms of our experience. And then we pull in the second pada. We pull in more, the jiva pulls in more to the kadana sharira, where nothing, the waking state or the dream state is now non-manifest. And then underlying that is the fourth pada, which is really the silent being, which is Brahman, which underlines and is the truth of the other three. So that's the idea. So it starts from this most external and moves inward. So what he says here is this. Let's read prayer here. This waking state, first thing he says is the waking state itself is external consciousness. And what's meant by that is that when your sense organs are open, the world that you're experiencing, the world of all of the forms, for instance, all of the forms that you're experiencing, are nothing but consciousness. There is no form
that is experienced as separate from consciousness. So consciousness actually is the substance of the form that you're experiencing. But the forms that you're experiencing in the waking state, means your eyes and sense organs are open, those forms are external. And so instead of saying the seer seeing, which is also true, in terms of your experience, what you're experiencing is external consciousness. Okay? Let me remember, Mandukya is the Advaita. It's the Upanishad that sits in Advaita. Remember last week when I gave the example of a fresco, when you get a big rectangle of clay, like a big block of clay, and you carve into the clay a scene, right? And so the scene, say a complex scene of a city, for instance, an ancient city with chariots and with, because this is what they would be thinking, chariots and horses and people, all decked out in city street, all the things that you would imagine if you were to look at a city scene, along with the sky and the sun and the clouds and whatever happened to be there, rain, if rain is there, that's all carved into the clay. Now, this, what you're viewing here in this fresco is a city scene which is representative of the waking state. Right? It's not a dream state. This is the waking state. And this waking state of this, all of this activity going on in the city, right? This waking state that you're viewing is nothing but the rupa, all of these forms of consciousness. You see, in this example, it's all of the forms of clay. Right? And so there's like an infinite manifestation, a multifarious manifestation in this block of clay. There is a multifarious manifestation of namarupa of clay. Right? So bahish prajnaha means external consciousness. The consciousness that is experienced as the waking state. So in this fresco, when you see all of this carved into the clay, this is really nothing but all of the different forms of clay. Right? You see that? It's all the different forms of clay. If you understand this block of clay, in a way, it's the understanding the whole vision. So let me just go through this again. We're waking state now, just in terms of bahish prajnaha. The whole Upanishad is looking namarupa, where om, the omkara, is the nama, right? It is the nama for the Brahman. Which is infinite. Brahman means that which is infinite. So then that Brahman is this Atma. So Om is the name for all that is. It has these four quarters. Right? So now remember that A-U-M, this Om, is something which beginning with A and ending with the Makara, A-U-M, will include all possible words because A is the first letter, M is the last letter. In the silence, bordered by the silence. So every conceivable nama is going to be contained within A-U-M, because the first sound and the last sound, every other sound is in between. So Om in that way is the perfect symbol to include all namas. Okay? Now, if you take all the namas that there are, we would normally, just as jivas, as individuals, we would take each nama one by one and attribute it to its given form. Like, for instance, if I say, give the nama the name chair. Chair will go to its rupa, chair. So I would have chair refers to, is a nama for this rupa, right? Then I say table. Table is a nama for this rupa, for this form. Rug. Rug is a nama for this rug. Okay? That's how we think of nama and rupa. In vyavahara, in our world of experience, on every level, the nama will refer to the particular object of which it's a name, right? Even when we go into the dream world, all of the namas will refer to the dream characters. Oh, I had a dream. In that dream, there was a chariot. And that chariot had six horses. Okay? So chariot goes to dream chariot. Horses go to dream horses. And this is vyavahara, and this is how we think. And this is what our language does. Language, words, refer to specific objects. Even if I say sky, sky goes to sky. Space goes to space. Okay? So nama rupa. But now we have a nama, om. This nama, om, refers to not a specific thing, but to all things. Om is a nama for all that is. Right? And so, if I'm going back, it's going to refer to all nama for the entire waking state, including, if I say the entire waking state, that's going to include both the waker and the experience of the waker. So om is going to be a nama, not just for the waking state. You have to include everything that is in the waking state, right? Everything that is in the waking state can be divided first off into the waker and the waking state, the experience of the waker. By waker, we mean the one who is experiencing the world through sense organs that are awake. Right? That's the waker. So the jagrita sthana, if it's the waking state includes the waker. That would be the akara of om. The ukara would be the dream state. The dream state includes the entire experience of the dream, which is experienced within the dream by the dreamer. So dreamer dreamt. Waker, waking state, dreamer, dreaming state. Now the thing is, when we say the waker in the waking state, the waker actually is part of the waking state. See that? You're not outside the waking state. You're part of the waking state. In the dream state, if you've taken a character in the dream state, you're not outside of the dream state. You're part of the dream state. And in the deep sleep state, there's not going to be any subject-object relationship that separates you in any way, right? The deep sleeper from the deep sleep state. There's not a subject-object relationship there. There's not any duality being experienced there. So, now, getting back to this. This jagarita sthana, what he says, how he's defining this now, is external consciousness. External consciousness, because in the waking state, this physical world is what is being experienced. Including this physical body is being experienced by the sense organs. So again, this is usually identified, this body is identified as me, the waker, but actually this physical body is experienced through the five sense organs, and so is very much part of the external world. Now, this external world that by external all we mean is that which is experienced, you know, through the sense organs, he says, this waking state is bahish pragnaha. Pragnaha means consciousness. It is external consciousness. The consciousness that we're now experiencing in the form of these namarupas. So the akara of the om is the name of this external world. See what I mean? And this external world is nothing but consciousness. Just like in the clay carving, all of the namas that exist between a and chariot, horse, etc., all of these namas are nothing but consciousness. See that? And the nothing but clay. And so now we're having to look at nama in quite a different way. It's no longer we're looking at the name as a name for a particular rupa. We're looking at what is actually the substance. We're looking at what is actually the substance of every rupa. Right? And so that substance, he's just saying, is consciousness. So this is external consciousness. This is body consciousness. This is table consciousness. This is lamp consciousness, rug consciousness, sky consciousness, cloud consciousness, sun consciousness. That there is actually nothing here but consciousness. And so now what he said, so what you're experiencing here, including the body, mind, sense organs, what we'll look at in a minute, the entire thing that you're experiencing is only consciousness. And so now, let's go through this at the, get through a little bit of this, and then we'll go back to this. The third one he says is, so, bahish pranyaha, external consciousness. It is septa angaha. Septa angaha is it's part of a famous mantra, famous verse. I think a lot of it is from the Chandogya. What he says here, let me find that. Is that place where he goes through this? These are the seven parts. This is a common type of upasana meditation that's done.
Pitch?
I'm on the basha.
Oh.
Don't worry about it. I'll just tell you what it says. What are the seven angas? What are these seven angas? He says the first anga. He says is the head, which are the heavens. The heavens are the head. This is all in the Upasana of Ishvara. Okay? So imagine the creation. The heavens are Bhagavan's head. Ishvara. So imagine Ishvara's head, the whole head, the heavens as the head. The eyes are the sun. Okay? So imagine the Lord. The whole heavens are the head. The eye, this is Chakshu. The eye is the sun. He says, the prana are the winds, the vital force. The pranas are the wind. And then he goes, the rains are the urine. The rains, the waters. The prithivi are the feet. Right? The earth is the feet. And then the seventh one is the agni, the fire in the ritual fire, that is the mouth. And when we do rituals, maybe you're offering to the Lord all of these, you know, ghee and etc. You're making hubbits, you're making so many offerings, that becomes the mouth. So this is a whole Vishwarupa. You're looking at the Lord with the head and the eyes and the prana, with the vital force, the wind is the prana. The rains are the evacuation of the waste. The feet is the earth, and the Lord is being fed by the havas, the things that are being offered into the fire. So now, notice what's happening here with this septangaha. He starts by saying this waking state is nothing but external consciousness, and it is in the form of Ishvara. It is the whole. Because when you imagine, when you think of Ishvara, Ishvara is the one who is the entire manifest creation. So this manifest creation, you know, you visualize Ishvara. And then he says, but it's not just Ishvara, not just the form of Ishvara, where I see the whole heavens, the head and the sun. I see the head, I see the heavens, and I see the sun, I see the eyes, and I see the prana, the vital force. And I see all of the waters, the rains, right? I see the waters as the rains. And then I see the feet. Right? And then I see the Lord being fed. That's the whole Ishvara. So this whole creation is the waking state. And then he goes to the individual, and it has 19 mouths. That's the whole Ishvara, and it has 19 mouths. The 19 mukhas, the 19 mouths, are this. It means how we experience, what the jiva uses to experience the world. So it's the 5 sense organs, the eyes, the ears, the sense of taste, sense of smell, sense of touch, the 5 sense organs. That's 5. The 5 organs of action. I can grasp things. This is what I use to relate to the world, to interact with Ishvara. The jiva is in interaction, is part and parcel of Ishvara, but also experiencing Ishvara in this way, through my 5 sense organs, through my 5 organs of action, my hands, my feet, my speech, the sexuality, the ability to evacuate. Those are what we call the karmendriyas. Those are 10, so 5. Then the 5 pranas that enliven this body, make it alive so that I can actually function and experience the world. Without prana, without the vital force, you may have a body here, but it's not functioning. You have sense organs not functioning. You have organs of action not functioning. You have a dead body because the prana has left. So the prana is there's 5 pranas, that makes 15. The pranas are that your circulatory system, your digestive system, your ingoing and outgoing breath, your the prana that allows for apana, allows for evacuation, the prana udhyana that allows the soul to eject out of the body at the time of death. These are the 5 pranas, and also the peristaltic movement is also udhyana. So just pick out 5 things that are the basic functions, the basic pranas that enliven this, that aliven and run this body. So that makes 15. You've got the karmendriyas, your organs of action, the jnanendriyas, the sense organs, and the 5 pranas, that's 15. Then you have the antakarana. The antakarana has the mind, which has 4 particular types of cognition, right? One is the buddhi, your intellect. The ahankara is the type of cognition, is the ahankara, the I notion that gives the kartritvam, bhoktritvam, the doership, enjoyership, because of the ahankara. Chitta, you have chitta, you have the memory, and then you have all of the emotions stored in the manas and just the fluctuating mind. So these 19, these are actually the 19 components that make up the jiva, the transmigrating jiva. And all of these components are necessary for the jiva to interact with the world. In fact, these 19 components transmigrate. It takes birth after birth after birth. It takes body after body after body. So first, look at what he says. This waking state is just external consciousness. It is comprised of Ishvara, and gives the upasana of Ishvara. It's comprised of, it is Ishvara, and it is the jiva. Now, if you say this, so it says, it is Ishvara. Let me go on, I'll do more of that later. It is Ishvara, it is the jiva, it has these 19 components for experiencing this world. So it is the world, and it is the one who's experiencing the world. Right? And it is just nothing but external consciousness. It is the entire world, Ishvara, the Lord, the conscious of the, what we call the whole Sameshti Upadanakarana. It means the whole manifest creation, and it is all of the individuals in the whole manifest creation that are experiencing the manifest creation. They themselves are part of it. So it's Mahavakya, we'll see in a minute. Then he says, it is also Stulabhuk. Okay? Stulabhuk means what is, book means to enjoy or to experience. What is experienced in the waking state are this external consciousness, are all of the objects that make up external consciousness. So think of it like this. Right now is if I am looking at this cup, right? I am an enjoyer of this cup. Right? This cup is an external consciousness. It requires my sense organs to perceive it. In the Bhasha, they make Shankara discusses this, saying, in reality, there is no experience of external consciousness, of external objects, of stula. You don't have any such experience. Because actually, when you perceive something, like if I'm looking at this cup, what is actually happening is my eyes are landing on the cup, right, giving me a vritti, a thought modification of the cup, which I experience. So I really only experience the vrittis, the thought modifications in my mind. I don't ever have a stula experience. There's no such thing as a stula book, right? But what we're talking about when we say that is like this. It's just language. I am the experiencer of this cup, okay? This cup exists in this bahishpragnaha, in the jagrita stanaha, in the waking state. And so it is an object of my awareness through my sense perception. So this is an external, right? This is extra bahishpragnaha, this is external consciousness, because I require my sense organs in order to experience it, even though the actual experience is only taking place in my mind in the form of a vritti. But I have to make a distinction in terms of my experience. Like if I say, I'm experiencing this cup through my, right now I'm experiencing this cup through my sense organs, but now I ask you, please imagine an apple. Okay? Now you're experiencing the apple, but not through your sense organs. So that experience of the apple is not stula book, right? It's not something that is being given to you from an experience that's being given to you from an external object here and now. See the difference? And so, you know, you can say this is picking, or, you know, you know, splitting hairs a little bit, but these hairs are important. So in the end, these are all important little hairs. So he says, stula book is, from the standpoint of the jiva, whatever is experienced through the sense organs, and those are stula, those are the gross elements. And then he says, and it is vaishvanara. Let me go to this vaishvanara here and tell you what he says about that. Says for Vaishvanara, he says, Vishwe Sham Nara Nam Anekada Nayanat Vaishvanara. Or Ishwar, the one who leads the jiva, because of leading the jiva into countless experiences. So Vaishvanara can be Ishwar. It's also Vishwa, and he also goes, Vishwanaraha eva Vaishvanaraha, means the one who is all beings. Vishwanaraha, all beings, is Vaishvanaraha. So you can take Vaishvanara here as a name for Ishwara. So you go from Bahishpragnaha, Ishwara, Septangaha. Bahishpragnaha is really Brahman, actually. We just think about what's being referred to. Bahishpragnaha, all external consciousness, just consciousness, externalized consciousness. It is Saptangaha, it is the whole Ishwara, it is Ekona Vimshati Mukaha, it is the Jiva with all of its 19 parts, it is Stulabhuk, the one who enjoys this physical universe, it is Vaishvanaraha, the Lord, the one who leads all humans to all variety of experiences. Says, and this is all of this makes up the pratama padaha. So, means the first pada. This waking state, the waking state, is the first pada of the omkara. So the first pada of the omkara, the first, we'd say for the omkara, it's the first mantra, it's the first letter of the first pada of Brahman. The first letter of the first pada of Brahman. So what we're doing is dissecting Brahman in reference to the creation that is really experienced by the jiva. So now what's being said is, okay,
if you have to go back, you have to remember all the always these first couple of verses. You know, the Omkara is all of this, right? It's going to be unfolded now. How is it going to be unfolded? What's the first definition of the Omkara? The letter Om is everything in the past, present, and future. All of this is represented by Om. Om is the nama for all of this. And it's also the nama for everything beyond past, present, and future. So that is the Omkara. Everything. Everything. Om is a name for everything that is. And he says, and all of this, everything that is, all of this for which Om is a name for, all of this is Brahman. Brahman, in the Upanishads and what is kind of already known in the tradition and needs to be unfolded thoroughly for us, you know, because we don't necessarily know that as being something that's kind of the very foundation of the Vedas, actually. If we say, I am the Jiva, yeah, there, I, the self, this Atma, is the Jiva, the individual. So this individual consciousness that we call the Pratyagatma, what makes me a conscious being, myself, I call myself the Atma. So Atma is the name for the individual self. This Atma, this Jiva, right, the individual self, exists in, as part and parcel of Ishvara, the Lord. So there's the Jiva, me, the individual self, and there's this Jiva, and myself is called the Atma. And then there's Ishvara, Bhagavan, the Lord, who is really in the form, in the waking state anyway, in the form of this whole manifest creation, all that is Ishvara. And Ishvara's self is called Brahman, right? The individual self, myself, is called the Atma, you know? So I would say the Jiva is the self of the Jiva is the Atma. The self of Ishvara, the Lord, is Brahman. Right? And Brahman means the self which is infinite. It comes from the root bra, which means to increase. When you take that as a noun, it becomes that which is infinite. There's nowhere else. It's already increased. It's already grown. There's no place for it to grow. It is infinite. So Brahman is that which is infinite. So Brahman is that name, is the name for the self of Ishvara. So I would say, I am, if I were to say, I am myself, I am the self, I would be saying, I aham Atma, I am the Atma. That's my name for myself is Atma. And Brahman would say, oh, well, the name for myself is Brahman. Right? And the Upanishad would say, I am Atma. This Atma that you are, this Atma is Brahman. This Atma is Brahman. And so when you start out, you come to teach, the student comes to the teacher and says, you know, who am I? Who am I? This self, this Atma that I am, my Atma, myself, what happens to me, the Atma, when I die? What happens to me when I die? Because when you come to this teaching of yourself that we call the Pratyagatma, the innermost self, this Pratyagatma is not considered Pratya. It's not considered innermost. This Atma is just automatically, naturally identified with the body, mind, sense organs, all of the upadis, all of the conditioning adjuncts of the body. So I come with this Atma, and my knowledge would be this Atma is different from you, is different from you. So there's 10 Atmas in the room, right? And Brahman, so I have a limited self, which is in the size of this body. It's limited by desha, kala, vastu, paricheda. I mean, it's circumscribed, paricheda. By space, I'm in this space, you're in that space. So my Atma is here, your Atma is there. Yeah. It's circumscribed by kala, by time. I was born at this date, and I can live for maybe so many years. But myself is circumscribed by time. It's circumscribed by vastu, my nature, how I look, how old I am, all the qualities that make me an individual are different than all the qualities that make you an individual. You know, you have your own shape, you know, and your own your own characteristics and your own qualities. So this is one vastu, two vastu, three vastu, four vastus. And so the jiva, the atma, for the ajnani is qualified by all of the, by time, by space, by quality. Brahman is also qualified. I mean, the Ishwara is also qualified. Ishwara is the one who is the manifestation of the entire creation. The conscious being, the Lord, we're not just saying creation is a numb, inert creation, but that this whole manifest creation, you know, that the jiva experiences through the sense organs, just looking at the waking state now, this entire manifest creation that we experience in the waking state is itself a conscious being. That consciousness, so if the waking state Brahman were to say who I am, he would say, I am Brahman. It means my being, that being, conscious being that I am, is limitless. You know? The Mahavakya that's been talked about here, even in this waking state, is that this Atma, this I am Atma, is Brahman. It's exactly what's said in the first two things. This Atma that I am, this Atma is Brahman. So the self that I am is the self that Ishwara is. Not like the self that Ishwara is, but is the self that Ishwara is. And so therefore, if I go from that standpoint that this Atma is Brahman, then as much as Ishwara can say, I am Ishwara, I also can say, I am Ishwara. Why? Because the word Atma and the word Brahman are referring to exactly the same thing. Right? If I say the conscious being that I am, this Atma, I am Atma, Brahma, this Atma is Brahman. When Ishwara says, from Ishwara's standpoint, if Ishwara were to talk, and Ishwara were to say, I am Brahman, and the Brahman that is being referred to, when Ishwara says, I am Brahman, is me, because I am Atma, this Atma is Brahman, then as much as I am the body, mind, sense organs, the jiva upadhi, as much as I am that, I am also equally the whole infinite upadhi, because the self is only one. And so if you think, now I'm not going into the dream state that we're going to go into here, but using the dream as a drishtanta, just think about exactly what's being said here. When the creation, when the dream creation comes into manifestation, say you go into bed, go to sleep, and you have a dream. There's two things that are happening there. There's one thing that's happening really, but we can dissect it. When the dream comes, I am the Brahman. I am Brahman, right? In reference to the dream, okay? I am the self. Let's look at it like this. I am the self of the whole dream. It's not that the dream character comes from the dream. In the dream, the whole dream comes from me. And the consciousness which the dream enjoys is only me, right? And that's an obvious thing. But now, and I can say, as from the waker analyzing the dream, I can say, you know, when the dream comes, I am the consciousness, the conscious being of the entire dream, and being the conscious being of the entire dream, I am the conscious being of everything in it. So I am the Atma of all of the characters in the dream. And I am the self, I am the Atma. I could say like this, I am the Atma of the entire dream. Okay? I'm the Atma of the entire dream, the self of the entire dream. Now if we go into the dream and we look at the relationship between all of the characters in the dream to the entire dream, then I would say, as a teaching methodology, this is a teaching methodology, we would call every conscious being, every individual in the dream has their own Atma, right? That this is yourself, talking to the teacher, the guru who's come into the dream now, and is teaching the dream students. Pointing out to yourself, 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 and bringing you step by step by step to the recognition that yourself is yourself, is yourself, is yourself, is the self of the entire dream, right? So not only am I the individuals in the dream, I am the whole dream. So I, the conscious being, am both the self of the individual and the self of the whole. So here, in the Mandukya Upanishad, how he's going like this, he says, this waking state, so think of the dream, when I dream, within the dream, that's the waking state, right? For the character that is experiencing the dream, the character who's experiencing the dream through this character's sense organs, experiencing that dream through the sense organs, that's the character's waking state. If you're dreaming, you know, and the character is walking around, the dream character is walking around in the dream, it first is experiencing the waking state through the sense organs. Then that dream character gets tired, right? Goes to bed and has a dream. Now that dream character is experiencing what they're experiencing is called the dream state. And then that character falls off into deep sleep, right? And in that situation, that dream character is experiencing the causal state. So now, we're using this kind of teaching methodology. There's some things that have to happen here. One is the recognition that the conscious being that you experience as yourself, is the conscious being, you know, that is the conscious being of the whole creation. Conscious being of the Atma, we call the conscious being of the individual the Atma, the conscious being of the whole creation, Brahman, right? They're just names for the one conscious being. Then that Atma, here's the Mahavakya. This is the whole teaching of the Upanishad. This Atma is Brahman. I am Atma Brahman. This Atma, the self that you are, is the self, is the being of the whole creation. Which would mean not twins, but that this, your self-experience, is me. Your self-experience of I am, when you say I am a conscious being, you are referring, your mind is chattering, talking, labeling consciousness. You're only referring to me, and I'm only referring to you. There is only one consciousness. So the consciousness that I am is the consciousness that you are, is the consciousness that Ishvara is. It is the one conscious being which the whole manifest creation enjoys. So that's why he starts out this waking state, right? This waking state, when you say waking state, you're assuming a waker, right? So I'm a waker in this waking state. Look at his language. Okay, this waking state is nothing but Bahish Prajnaha. It is nothing but external consciousness. External consciousness. There's nothing else but consciousness. But it's viewed only in reference now. We're only viewing it in reference to the external perceptions that take place, right, through the sense organs. So this whole thing is external consciousness because the experience is taking place from the standpoint of the jiva through your sense organs. That's external consciousness. And this external consciousness is Ishvara. Because the external consciousness is all of this. And so he gives the upasana of Ishvara. All of this, see the head as the heavens. See Ishvara, see the sight as the eye. The vital force is the pranas. The rain is the urine. The feet as the earth. So you see now this external consciousness is Ishvara. And within this whole external consciousness that we call it Ishvara, right? Why do we call it Ishvara? Because it's consciousness. It's not inert. It's a conscious being. And within this conscious being, which is the whole Ishvara, there is the jiva, right, that has these 19 windows, these 19 mouths. I've got my sense organs, the 5 sense organs, the 5 karmendriyas, the organs of action, the 5 vital force, all of the different types of vrittis, thoughts in the mind. So, consciousness is this external consciousness, which is Ishvara, and then the waker who's experiencing it, right? The waker who's experiencing all of this becomes the doorway through which
consciousness becomes external. Because if you say external consciousness, then you have to say external to who? You know? Consciousness isn't external to anything. There's, when you say external consciousness, who's it external to? Who's Ishvara external to? Only external to the jiva, who's experiencing it through the sense organs. So this whole waking state, this external consciousness, includes Ishvara, and Ishvara includes, you know, the waker who is within the waking state. There is no waking state without a waker. But the waker is not outside of the waking state. And so this whole Pratamapada, this whole first, this first pada represented by the amatra, right, is only consciousness plus nama. It's external consciousness. And so now, with a nama, om, the akara, the a-u-m, stands for all possible letters. So all possible letters, all possible words, are just words for consciousness. Right? On our level, in Vyavahara, as an ajnani, you know, as an ignorant person, the namas that I use, are namas for rupas, for forms that are within the whole manifest creation. So, like for instance, as I said, the word table goes to table. The word chair goes to chair. The word individual goes to that person, like that. So all of the namas that you use are only going to the forms within the manifest creation. But now this Upanishad is saying, all of these forms, that all have their individual namas, really are part of one nama that we call Om. Okay? And this Om is really the nama, it's the one nama, right, for all that is. And so, in fact, in that way, then all of these namas that we have here, which exist within the name Om, all of the namas, because A through M, all namas exist within the name Om, and the name Om is the name for Brahman. Right? And Brahman is all of this, and Brahman is yourself. Brahman, who is all of this, first two verses, and Brahman is yourself. And so all of the names that we have that exist within Om are really only names for Brahman. And Brahman is yourself. See what I mean? And so then we have to say, all of this that we've had all these individual names for, all of these are just individual names for consciousness. You know? Just like in the clay fresco, all of the different names, all of the nama rupa that are there, are really nothing but consciousness. And so the names that you have that you think are names for this, like say in that big fresco, you have a name for chair. So chair initially for you is just going to go to the object chair. But in the end, the name chair has to go to consciousness. So chair, not chair to chair, but chair to consciousness. So this would be chair consciousness, table consciousness, person consciousness, eye consciousness. And you recognize that all the experience that you have really is nothing but consciousness. Okay? So let's stop there and maybe do just a real quick meditation before we say our prayer so I can show you, give you an experience of that. So just close your eyes and relax. And just listen, feel your body. This is all the Bahishpragnaha. Feel your body against the rug or the chair, couch. And just have the experience of that sense of touch. Any sounds or ripples you may hear in the environment. Cars in the distance. My voice speaking. and see if you can notice that whether internal experience or external that is taking place through my sense perception. There is nothing that has any substance or separation from consciousness. In fact, you can even say the experience that you're having is only consciousness. Because there is nothing, no experience of any kind. That can be independent of consciousness. You divide consciousness into subject and object. You, the individual, experiencing Stulabhuk. Objects, you're experiencing objects, subject-object, through your sense organs. But actually from the inside out, there's only one consciousness in which knower known experiences are taking place. Knower consciousness, known consciousness. Knower consciousness is not any different than known consciousness. There's only one consciousness. That is the self of the knower and the self of the known. Experiences that come and go are like froth. An example that's used, froth, the ocean waves. Purnamidachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
There's a way in which equating Atman, Brahman, Ishvara is almost just a result of the way we think about things in language, that really it's more like, it's like the six blind men and the elephant, that they're not really separate in the first place. They don't really need to be equated. That's just because we talk about them.
That's right. That's right, because the thing is that we come to this knowledge with an ignorance. We come with that sense of difference, that Atma means individual self, or Pratyek Atma, my innermost self. I don't come to teaching with the idea that there's only one self. And so it is a teaching tool, because see, when you, just in your experience, you are, even forget Ishwara, just you in reference to the waking state, right? You are the seer, the experiencer, the conscious being who experiences this world, right? So you are a conscious being experiencing the world, you are a conscious being, so there's many Atmans in the room. So we have to go from that position of many Atmas to one Atma. Mm-hmm. There's not many Atmas, there's only one Atma. That one Atma we call Brahman, because that one Atma is infinite. So we say the Atma, the self of Ishwara, we call Brahman. But what we have to go to, that's not even complete. We go from one Atma, one self, I mean, we go from individual Atmas to one self, to one Atma that we call Brahman. And then now we have one Atma, so we've gone from many Atmas to one Atma, but now we have the one Atma and this creation. Until then, we have many Atmas who are experiencing this creation. Now we go from one Atma, who is the self of this creation. But now we have the one Atma and the creation. So now we have to go from the one Atma to, you know, the one Atma and the creation, that's Dvaita, to this creation being nothing but that Atma, which is Brahman. That's a Dvaita. Otherwise you have Dvaita. You start out with absolute Dvaita. There are many Atmas, you know, all of whom are different from this creation. To there is one Atma and one creation. Okay. To there is only one Atma that we call Brahman.
You know, to me it's kind of easy to see that there's one consciousness, one being. Yeah. But to see all the objects being Ishwara as one is a little more challenging.
That's why I really love that clay fresco understanding, because then you can see, you know, when you're seeing that scene, that can be as complex as the clay fresco can be as complex as the universe, the scene. And you can see, in spite of that difference, the difference is all there, you know, but there's only one clay. Right? In spite of all of the diversity, all of the duality, there's only one substance. So we use the wave ocean a lot also. You know, the wave ocean, all so many waves are there, but there's only one water. So that's...
Mm-hmm. Then are you supposed to behave differently if you see it's all one clay or all one water? Then how do you behave with all...
Well, part of it... That's kind of the so what factor, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's all one, so how does that help me?
I don't know about that factor.
Okay, well... To me, it's the so what factor.
The so what factor.
We're all,
what the hell did I say?
If the nature of the Atma, of your being, was different from what you're seeking in samsara, see, because every jiva wants liberation. But liberation means I want to be whole and complete. So... We don't call it liberation. I want to be whole and complete, so let me have this and this and this and this and get rid of this, this and this. And no, actually, I didn't want that after all. I do need this, this and this. It goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
The seeking for the ananda, what we call ananda, the very nature of yourself.
Yeah.
But the mind is taken on a wild ride of, you know, emotional angst and moments of relief. Emotional angst, you know, with moments of relief whenever you fulfill a desire, because you've projected, if I could have this, then I could be whole. If I could have this, then I could be whole.
Yeah.
You know? And so the mind is going through anxiety. Anxiety relief, as I go trying to fulfill these desires. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the anxiety relief, or the relief anxiety whenever I fulfill a desire. Because it's apart from me, you know, I have to protect it. I can lose it. And so the mind isn't stupid. It knows all of these things. Mm-hmm. It knows the finitude of all of your experience. You know, but we take the objects of experience to be the thing that we seek. And it's not the thing that we seek. The thing we're seeking, ananda, and we've superimposed it on the object. Not seeking the object. We're seeking ananda. The instant the object stops being as though a provider of ananda, I have no interest in it. It's a garage sale material. It's you know, or divorce material, you know, separation material. Because it's not what I'm seeking. What I'm seeking is the wholeness, mm-hmm. which is the very nature of my being. Right? But the mind doesn't know that conscious being is superimposed on the mind and then superimposed on the world, and so there's this what we call mutual superimposition going on between consciousness and these things. I give consciousness, which is the truth of all of these things, is superimposed on the things, because consciousness is not an object. You are never an object. You can't be objectified. And yet, because you can't be objectified, it's not going to be a thing that you're seeking. Because you're seeking things. This jiva, which is a thing, is seeking other things, all the while missing the very substance of me. I am not a thing, but I am projected onto, my mind projects my being, me, onto things. Okay. Right? Onto the subject and onto the object.
Okay, I see. I sort of follow that. But why is the world presented as Ishvara then?
Because there's only one conscious being. Ishvara is this whole universe is a conscious being. It's consciousness. Why are you presented as a conscious being?
Oh, because I am.
Yeah, so is Ishvara. In fact, there is only consciousness. There is only... And consciousness, that's also an abstract word. Mm-hmm. You know, consciousness or awareness. So there is only me. The nature of consciousness is my own being. And so the words like consciousness, awareness, being, existence, all these words have to land on your own self-experience as me, the conscious being. So none of the words are good enough, really, for the very personal nature of myself, of who I am, the me that I can never negate. There can be all kinds of experience, happy experiences, sad experiences, perceptions, memories, all types of experiences. But those, I'm always the center of those experiences. So in language, all of these are all my experiences. So I recognize all these experiences as belonging to me, even though they're all coming and going in me. But the point is that this me, this very personal me, is changeless. It never comes and goes. It's the very substratum, the very being that all experiences enjoy. All like froth. All the experiences that you're having are just coming and going. They have no substance at all in and of themselves. But the substance that they have is the consciousness, which is the stable factor. If you just, you know, like if you're just sitting quietly and you just let... Just relax and let all of the experiences, the sensory experiences, the emotional memories, all of the things that are coming and going, just let them come and go and just notice that they're just froth in terms of substance. The substance is absolutely stable. It is conscious being. Conscious being, it doesn't move at all. It is. It is the stable reality. It is the reality. But that reality isn't objectified, it's my own self-evident nature.
It seems like the leap to that is also Ishvara comes not so much from the the fresco teaching uncovers satya mitya. But what I'm hearing and what you're saying, the leap to that is Ishvara is more the maker and material are the same proof or argument. You know, the efficient cause and material cause being the same gets more to the leap to Ishvara for me than the fresco, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Does that make sense?
It does.
The leap to is all this Ishvara, the maker material piece, the spider image and all those things?
Yeah, you get to like the efficient cause. But on another level, what we call the upadana karana, if all that there is consciousness, conscious being, right? And conscious being is not only the self of the jiva, it is the self of the whole, right? And so what makes you a conscious being is the conscious being, right? What makes the whole a conscious being is the conscious being. There's no difference. There's only conscious being. But if I look at conscious being from the standpoint of the whole, then that is Ishvara. It means this whole manifest creation is a conscious being. Yeah. But that other what you're saying is right also. Where we and that's just not the focus right now, but it is correct. We say, normally when you think of a creator and created, they're two separate things, like the pot maker and the pot that's being made. That's the stock example. The pot maker, you know, is the efficient cause. The one who's standing there making the, conceptualizes the pot and makes the pot and is different from the pot, different from the clay, right? So there's a difference between the creator and the created there. Where here, there is no difference between the creator and the created because there is only consciousness. Right, so the efficient, what we call the nimitta karana, the efficient cause, and the material cause, the upadana karana, are one and the same consciousness, not two. You don't have a pot maker making, you know, like the Lord making us a creation that is separate from the Lord. The Lord is consciousness, the creation is consciousness. There is nothing but consciousness. And so that what that means is there really is no creation.
Yeah, that's the hard part, because you say there's only consciousness, and I sort of can see that. And then on the other hand, all these objects and things, you know, they seem different than consciousness. They seem that way.
Well, they're going to seem that way from the standpoint of the seer seeing. So you have to recognize a different dimension there, and that's the self of the seer and the self of the seeing. You have to see what is actually there is consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And consciousness is what's stable. If you go to analyze all of these objects, you can take any given object and you can never find an object.
Yeah.
So Swamiji doesn't use objects anymore, he just says nama. Because there is no object to be found. You're naming all of these things. You know, like one object breaks into smaller objects. So he's just stopped using objects because there aren't any objects. There's just names. Names within names within names. It's called, you know, namni namani. Namni means in the name, but namani names. Names in the name. So names within names within names within names within names.
Well, it's almost like
goes into an infinite regress.
It's almost like you have to see it like a physicist, or this is just energy here.
Well, but energy is objectifiable. That's where people get stuck. Oh, there's everything's just energy. Energy is objectifiable, so that's what we can do in science. And then we can have names for different, more subtle layers of energy. Anything that we can measure, we have to be able to measure it. That means we have to be able to objectify it. Consciousness is not measurable as an object because it can't be objectified. It is always the subject of everything, whether it's the subject or the object, the knower or the known, within duality, consciousness is the knower and consciousness is the known and consciousness is the knowing. There is nothing in consciousness. There is nothing that consciousness is not. Right? So it's the self of the knower, it's the self of the known, it's the self of the pramanas, the means of knowledge for knowing. There is no consciousness itself is known only because it's self-evident, not because it's known as an object.
It's the self-shining, self-evident bottom line of all experience, and it's non-dual. It doesn't waver. It's not like this underlying consciousness is different from this underlying consciousness. There's only one consciousness, and it's the same everywhere at all times. And from its own standpoint, there's not any everywhere, because time and space exist within the dual creation. So for consciousness, consciousness is only one without a second. It doesn't have a right side or a left side. It doesn't spread out. It's all that there is. And it's homogeneous. It doesn't have sides, like, or a little thin consciousness over here and a thicker consciousness over here. It's just one consciousness that's free from desha, space, kala, time, vastu, any type of objectification. You know?
Except, what's so hot for the mind to wrap itself around that? I mean, because it seems like if you could keep that perspective and really completely integrate that, like when you said, hey, let's just experience this, right? It was kind of like an attempt to leap into that, right?
Yeah, just to recognize it.
Yeah, exactly. So it becomes actually, we walk out of here, and it's not like now the understanding becomes like just memory. But it actually becomes a living experience, you know, and that's so...
Exactly, but that's what this knowledge is. It's a living experience, living recognition.
Yeah, so yeah. What I'm just saying is, what's so interesting is, it seems like, you know, we put these glasses on, we look through these glasses in this moment,
yeah.
And we see everything as consciousness, and it becomes a little more clear, and yeah. Next time it becomes a little bit more clear. And we kind of keep putting on the glasses, but we're also taking them off again.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Initially.
Why? You know, what is this mechanism that still takes the glasses back off, even though there's this recognition that in the world seems to look much more authentic or... Mm-hmm. Not authentic is maybe not the right word, because it might not be authentic for me, but real
yeah.
or something, if I have the glasses on. Do you know what I mean?
But yeah, but we have like beginningless experience,
uh-huh.
you know,
yeah.
of experiencing the world through our sense, perception, and mind within a dual way,
yeah,
not
yeah.
recognizing, you know, being itself as the substance of the whole thing. So,
but it's interesting. It's just mind-boggling that the shift doesn't happen, even though the recognition is there. You know, the total shift. I mean.
Yeah. It does happen, though. It
it's
does happen over time. It's gradual.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the samskaras are so much, you know.
It's amazing.
Why are the 19 qualities of the jiva described as mouths? I didn't quite understand that.
Part. Yeah. It's only because it's the way, usually you're only talking about the mind and sense organs as mouths. But it's only, all they mean there is that these are the karanas. Karanas means the means for experiencing the creation.
They're like openings.
Yeah. Yeah, well, not just openings. Even my hands, I experience this creation and interact with the creation through my hands, through my feet, right? Through the vital force. Otherwise, I can't interact with the creation if these things are missing. So you need all of this to be fully present to the whole creation. All of these things need to be functioning. They're my gateways of consciousness
mm-hmm.
to interaction with the creation.
Well, is it something like eating? Is it related to eating?
Yeah.
We consume the world.
Huh?
Yeah, we consume the world through our experience, and these are the means for experiencing and for maintaining the experience. Like, say the pranas are gone, then this body is just food. You know, it's not the jiva not here anymore without the pranas.
Time for one more?
Yeah.
So, Om is as Anama is naming Brahman.
Yeah.
Right? Which is beautiful because an Om is the only Nama that is naming Satyam. All other Namas, by definition, name Mithya. Yes?
Yeah, you can say like that.
Which is pretty
right.
awesome.
Yeah.
Right? So, is then Om also seen as the name of Ishvara? Or did
yeah.
I make that leap? Did you not
no,
say that?
No, it is the name of Ishvara.
Okay. So
because when we say Brahman, it's the name for Brahman. But Brahman is Ishvara. There's no, right?
Yes and, or yes but, that is Ishvara not contained in Mithya? by definition, meaning that Ishvara is Brahman manifest?
Yeah, but so what if with the Bahish Prajnaha, what if when I see all of this as only Brahman, as only consciousness?
Right. So then Om is both naming Satyam and all Mithya.
That's right.
So it is inclusive of Ishvara, even though I can say Ishvara is by definition Mithya.
Well, you actually have to know...
Ishvara is kind of a foot in both canoes, kind of.
Yeah, it's a foot in both canoes, because that Nama Rupa, the names and forms of the total, right, are all Nama Rupa, are Mithya. But the truth of all Nama Rupa is Brahman.
Right, so the truth of Ishvara is Brahman.
So when we say, if I have to be able to say both, as a jnani, I have to be able to say both of these things and know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I have to be able to say, I am Ishvara. Mm-hmm. And I have to be able to say, I am Brahman. Mm-hmm. You know. But if I can't say, I am Ishvara, then there's something left out that I'm not. Mm-hmm. Right? Because really, the only thing, there's only Brahman here. There's only one Brahman, and yourself is that Brahman. And that Brahman is the self of all that is. Right?
It kind of comes to Michael's.
Yeah. That really the differentiation is just to help us talk about it, because as soon as we start talking about it, we can put a Brahman equals Ishvara. But Ishvara helps us talk about the world, the creative world, the differentiation.
It's not that Brahman equals Ishvara. Okay. You'd have to say like this. Because Ishvara, if I say Ishvara, I'm taking into account the whole infinite Maya Upadi.
The differentiated state.
Yeah, the whole infinite universe on all levels, right? That have for their self Brahman. So that's what I mean with Ishvara. So I'm taking into account the Maya Upadi. So that's why if I say, I am Ishvara, remember the truth of Ishvara is only Brahman. There really is no Maya Upadi that has any being apart from Brahman. Right? Just like the pot has no being apart from the clay. There's only clay there, really. Right? There's no pot. But there's pot. It's useful. But there's only clay. So like that, the whole infinite universe is only Brahman. So Brahman plus this Maya, which has no being apart from Brahman, is what we call Ishvara. If I want to name just what is there in terms of being, then I say Brahman. There's only Brahman, right? But Brahman, when viewed in terms of the whole Maya Upadi, we call Ishvara.
Well, Om includes both names, right? You say
yeah.
It, because it...
Om is the name for all that is, Brahman plus Maya.
All so that is, and...
No.
More than all that is.
No. All that is past, present, and future. All that is that ever could be.
Yeah, well, wait, there was one more definite one.
And all things behind. All things, you know, free of time also. But
yeah.
When I say all that is, I'm talking about all that is past, present, and future on every level.
Yeah.
Okay? So that all that is what we call Maya, the whole manifest creation. It contained within A-U-M, within the Om. And the Om takes place in silence. It's with substratum is being. Om comes from silence, is sustained by silence, and resolves back into silence. That's how we view the Om. Then the silence is Brahman, right? The A is Ishvara, the waking state, the Jiveshvara, waking state, Jiveshvara, dream state, Hiranyagarbha, you know, and then the deep sleep state. All of which are nothing but consciousness. Consciousness is both the subject and the object, and is the truth of all three states. We'll see.
Good.
Om.
Yeah,